Spring has come, which historically would usher in the early phase of the big summer movie season. But while audiences are still not quite ready to flock to their neighborhood Cineplex, marquee movie franchises are still finding a way to extend their reach to us straight into our homes. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. Favorite characters from both the Marvel and DC comic book universes launched new shows and movies last week. Joining me to discuss Disney's new Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Warner Brothers and HBO Max's Zack Snyder's Justice League, I'm happy to have on the program filmmaker and host of Tower Productions TowerCast, Carlos De La Torre. Good morning, Carlos.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Chuck. Two for two. I feel like one of the cool kids being back on.
It is nice to have you back. I know these are movies and shows near and dear to your heart. Two of the biggest superhero franchises laid out very different new products this past week. Why don't you start us off with Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I am a big Marvel fan. I love the MCU. I love what they're doing. I think Kevin Feige, masterfully, is becoming a very good storyteller as a producer, which is really rare to kind of complete that circle of things with Feige. So we have The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's Marvel Studios' new hour series on Disney Plus that revolves around the beloved B characters of Marvel, of Bucky the Winter Soldier Barnes and Sam Falcon Wilson. Based on the comic books by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Joe Simon, the story is tailored around the aftermath of what we know as the blip disappearance incident that was caused in, you know, by Thanos in the Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, respectfully. So we have characters that we kind of all show, the films, I mean, as very supporting characters. And it's amazing how they did this because it's grounded in reality. This series actually poses interesting questions that we as an audience ask ourselves about superheroes. How do superheroes make a living? What are the psychological after effects of the things they've done, good and bad? You know, these are notable things and questions that we've probably been asking ourselves since we were little kids reading comic books. How do they pay their bills, you know, and the struggles that they go through on the humanistic level? So I thought that was a very interesting approach to this show. I haven't quite seen that as much.
Yeah, I agree. And Disney Plus is doing some interesting stuff with their platform, both in the Star Wars and Marvel universes, sort of delving into these side stories. And as you say, B characters or even third tier characters in some cases. This is, of course, following up on the just completed episodes of WandaVision, which also looked at two of the not necessarily minor, but certainly not the forerunners in the Avengers. And looking at those characters in domestic ways, in some ways, which it's been many, many decades since I read comic books. But I do recall back in the day that comic books often explored some of these downtimes. You know, most of the movies now, it's just action from explosions right from the beginning to the end. But you're right, watching a story where particularly Anthony Mackie, I think trying to get a loan to save his family's commercial fishing boat and home was really struck a chord with me. It's something we've not seen developed in any of these superhero films. And of course, Sebastian Stan, as you mentioned, is grappling with some perhaps PTSD over some things he's done in his life and actually seeing a psychiatrist for it.
That was the most interesting thing about the episode, I think, is it really set it up for me to what I mean, just a quirky kind of question. What does it look like when a superhero, you know, and supervillain to a certain degree, right? What does it look like in their therapy sessions?
I don't know about you, but you know, after the Avengers kind of came to a conclusion with Endgame, the last big film that had all the characters in it, and we had the retirement, at least from the show, of several major characters, several of the main actors that were beloved among fans over 20-some films, the question that stuck in my mind is, what is next? And it's interesting how Disney Plus is using their platform to do these short series to start to build awareness and backstories for these lesser characters. I don't know about you, but it feels like, you know, they're trying to walk before they run, before the next big wave of films come out.
I think it's a good way to go through the dynamics of storytelling through TV. The beauty about storytelling through TV to most people is the dynamics, the rise and the falls in a short period of time. And then obviously the cliffhanger at the end, you know, that's kind of the structure. So I think it's refreshing for people to kind of, it's almost like we're going back to this format of early TV where we're waiting for the next week, for the next episode. Mm. We haven't had that in binge culture. We haven't had that in a very long time. So for me, it's refreshing. I think it's very interesting that Disney Plus is doing that. And they're doing a mighty fine job. I mean, without getting into too much detail, The Mandalorian, as you said, with the Star Wars universe was fantastic. But Jon Favreau leading the team there. And then, you know, WandaVision was actually pretty great to look at as well. So I think they're doing a fantastic job. And other platforms are starting to lead into their footsteps. You know, they're following them along to try to tell these stories as well.
Well, jumping over to the DC universe, if we look all the way back 4 years ago, and unless yes. you've been living under a rock the past 4 years, you know that the greatest affront to artistic expression the cinema world has ever known was Warner Brothers' decision to meddle in the director Zack Snyder's 2017 film Justice League, or at least that's how Zack Snyder's loyal fan base reacted. Justice League was to be Snyder's magnum opus that would reestablish Warner Brothers' superhero credentials and set up myriad spin-off films. But after fights with the studio and a family tragedy, Snyder withdrew from the film, and Warner's brought in The Avengers from the Marvel side, veteran writer-director Joss Whedon, to extensively remake Snyder's movie. The resulting retooled and reshot 2017 film was a critical and box office disappointment. Warner Brothers had once again squandered some of its most famous assets, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman, among others. And here we are 4 years later. Almost immediately, Snyder's fan base assembled their own defense league as rumors and legend of a phantom Snyder cut of Justice League grew these past few years. So did the opportunity for Warner Brothers' parent company to use the fan interest to drive eyeballs and subscriptions to its new and somewhat stumbling streaming service, HBO Max. And so last Thursday, the world finally could gaze upon Zack Snyder's Justice League, all 4 hours and 2 minutes of it. Running almost twice as long as the 2017 version of the film, and after another $70 million investment for Snyder to play with, what does the world really have? Well, more of everything. And mostly, more is more, if you're a fan. Every character gets more screen time, and several minor characters have expanded backstories that are satisfying and elevate their profiles within the film. But it is excessive, and Snyder is so attached to his baby and the myriad side streets he wants to explore that the thrust of the film is often throttled. Subjectively, it's easy to score this new Justice League as a success compared to its adulterated 2017 offering, but it falls far short of anything approaching the legendary status it had attained as an unfinished and unseen phantom film. For those types of comparisons, perhaps, but those types of comparisons perhaps miss the mark and miss the film's historical importance. Zack Snyder's Justice League, love it or hate it, is a sign of the movie industry's paradigm shift that's taking place right now, a shift that hopes to preserve big-budget, multi-character superhero stories just as the theatrical release model declines and studios carve out digital space in our homes. And Justice League will certainly forever carry a historic footnote. Never before has so much time and money been thrown at making a film three times over. This, I got to tell you, Carlos, this felt like a bit of archaeology. I felt like it's already a dinosaur. It's a throwback to 4 whole years ago where we were in the industry.
It's the classic Hollywood story for filmmakers, isn't it? It's the classic artist, director making something that's meddled with by the studio for commercial purposes. And then we don't know the difference until we see the latest cut. There was an interesting interview with Snyder and Kevin Smith where Snyder essentially said, I never saw the theatrical cut. So it's hard for me to say this is the director's cut or the extended cut. This is the only cut I know, you know, so it's interesting to see his vision kind of finally fulfilled, at least for him.
I think audiences will be surprised before the film even starts that there's a message that says the film is being presented in a 4-3 aspect ratio.
Oh, yes.
To preserve the director's creative intent, which just about knocked me out of my chair, which I had already comfortably settled into for 4 hours. But for those who don't know what 4-3 aspect ratio is, it's like a classic film. So on your widescreen televisions, there are big black bars on left and right, and the image is almost square. It's an unusual choice, and I don't buy for a minute the notion that this was ever going to go over big in the cinema. So I don't know about you, but I've been thinking a lot about this place in time and how the pandemic has affected things. And, you know, we've not had superhero films for a whole year now. So there's a big pent-up demand. So they hit it just right with that. But in a weird way, COVID has given HBO Max and Warner Brothers this opportunity to roll it out in a new way. And between the 4-3 aspect ratio and the fact that Snyder cuts the film up into 7 distinct parts mm-hmm. with chapter headings or part headings, it certainly felt like it was always intended for streaming. But that wasn't the case. So I feel like they've accidentally fallen into just the right way to put this film out.
Maybe it's a breath of fresh air for individuals. You know, Chuck, you and I love classic cinema, and classic cinema doesn't shy away from 3-3.5 hour, you know, runtime. So I think it's opening a door for kind of mainstream audience to pay attention to those things, as to not flinch at long running times anymore, hopefully in other genres as well, but certainly in the superhero genre. And comparatively, the 4-3 aspect ratio could be justified. But I want some type of confirmation from the studio or from Snyder himself on whether it was a stylistic choice to pay homage to classic superhero movies and comic books, or whether it was just because it was shot in IMAX and that's how they're going to want to present it in the theaters. My guess is it's going to make a comeback in the movie theaters once cinemas open again. And maybe the IMAX screening of it may justify it. But there's no confirmation. That's all speculation on my end. But I think regardless, it's going to open this world for individuals who are used to binging 12-hour series in 12 different chunks to just kind of sit and watch one long theme the way film directors intended it.
I'm glad you mentioned binging, because also for me, the way in which this has been presented, I think if this had come out in a normal traditional model of going to theaters for a few months and then a few months later it gets to streaming or VOD or Blu-ray, that it would have done fairly poorly in cinemas. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. very hard to put a 4-hour movie into that container, the way cinemas are structured, and to sit through 4 hours in a contemporary cinema. And like you say, audiences have grown so used to binging their favorite shows, 4 hours of just sitting and watching Friends straight through is nothing anymore in a home setting. So again, accidentally, and because of COVID, it seems like everything aligned for this to come out perhaps in the best way possible. But I would also say the accidental benefit of the 4-3 aspect ratio, because so much more time, a good 2 hours more, is mostly spent developing the smaller storylines and the character backstories, the emotional part of the film.
Oh, yes.
It feels a lot smaller and more suited to the intimacy of our home. Whenever we got to the big action scenes, I kept wanting to know what was happening between those black bars on the left and right of the screen. The film felt a little small in those moments, but otherwise it felt just about right.
Absolutely. I think the you know, Ben Affleck's Batman, I saw a little more intimacy in his character. The cyborg character was probably the biggest thing about this film emotionally.
Of course.
He really was the heart of the film, and I'm surprised that he was cut out for most of it in the original cut. but that monologue at the end with his father and the letter, and it just really encapsulated the heart of the film and what they were going for, and I absolutely agree with you on developing these emotional arcs for the characters.
Well, it's certainly more satisfying for people who don't like superhero movies just because of action. It has a lot slower pace for a big part of the film, and we get actual characters and actors getting to talk. But, Carlos, it's always good to get your insights on these, and I really appreciate you coming in. Any real quick suggestions for other things people might check out?
It's Oscar season, Chuck. I'm on my Oscar kind of binge right now. Definitely want to notably mention Promising Young Woman. Sound of Metal is another one I've seen recently. One that wasn't an Oscar nod, but was still very impressive for me to watch, the most recent thing was I Care a Lot, yep. which was very interesting to see on the
screen. I concur with all three of those choices, all streaming and all up for various Oscars. Well, I've been discussing several new superhero offerings just released on streaming platforms with special guest and CEO of Tower Productions, Carlos Della Torre. Disney is hoping to build up several of its side heroes and its Falcon and Winter Soldier series on Disney Plus. And Warner Brothers just released the long-awaited, by some, four-hour version of its 2017 film Justice League, now remade and reassembled into Zack Snyder's Justice League. You can watch this epic on HBO Max. Thanks to the KTEP staff for editing today's program. I'm Charles Horak. Stay safe, keep those masks on for a little while longer, and thank you for listening to On Film.